Hello, good afternoon. Thank you all for coming to the inaugural conference of the Financial Services Bar Association. And to those of you who have joined the FSBA, whether as barrister members or affiliate members, on behalf of the committee of the FSBA, we're very grateful indeed for your support. Today, we will be analysing the Central Bank Individual Accountability Framework Bill 2022. As you will hear, this is complex legislation which will enact significant changes to financial services regulation in Ireland. We are delighted and privileged that the Honourable Ms. Justice Nuala Butler has agreed to open the conference for us today. But before I introduce Judge Butler, a word or two about the running order today. After Judge Butler's opening remarks, David Sweetman will give a précis of the bill. Then our three panel sessions will begin with a coffee break after the first panel at about 3 p.m. There will be opportunities for questions and comments at the end of each panel session. We are aiming to close the conference at around 5:30. It's now my pleasure to introduce Judge Butler. Judge Butler was appointed by the government to the Court of Appeal in July 2022, having previously served on the High Court since 2020. Prior to her appointment to the bench, she was a practicing barrister specialising in a range of areas, which included public and administrative law, constitutional law, and the disciplinary and regulatory side of employment law. She also lectured in the law faculty at UCD and at the Smurfit Business School. Judge Butler, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, John, for inviting me to give the introductory remarks at this conference, and it's a great privilege on my part to do so. Having thought about the topic that's under consideration this afternoon, and indeed the association that's hosting the conference, there were two or three preliminary thoughts that occurred to me. The first is the importance of an association like the Financial Services Bar Association. Every time I drive into work, listening to the radio, I get told that the country's on the brink of recession. The reasons for that are very different to the reasons that applied in 2008, but it is likely that the events of the next couple of months will have a serious impact on credit, on borrowing, on lending, on savings, and on pensions, all of which are inextricably linked to the financial services sector. And it's crucial that the situation that came about in 2008, where the financial services sector was a driver of the recession, is avoided. That points to the necessity for strong regulation and indeed for strong commitment on the part of the financial institutions to upholding the necessary standards. Whilst that is primarily the task of the central bank, in order for any regulatory system to work effectively, there has to be a cohort of lawyers available with the necessary skills to advise, to represent, and if necessary, to litigate. And it's in that space that the Financial Services Bar Association finds itself, not exclusively in that space, because the area covered is broader than simply regulation, but it's a very important space, and I commend the founder members of the Financial Services Bar Association for setting up an organisation that is dedicated to improving the expertise and skill level of lawyers with an interest in and a desire to practice in this area. That led me to the topic of the conference itself, the Individual Accountability Framework in the 2022 Bill, which now, at very most, will become the 2023 Act. This is a significant legislative amendment directed at the reform of culture in the financial services sector. In my notes, I have the word culture in inverted commas, and I look forward very much in the course of the afternoon to gaining, I was going to say, a deeper understanding of exactly what that means, but perhaps some understanding of exactly what that means. The proposals in the bill also extend the application of regulatory standards to everybody working in a regulated firm and dissociate the pursuit of administrative sanctions from the proof that the firm has been engaged in a regulatory breach. These are important steps. But my initial thought on even reading the presse of the proposed amendments was that it is undoubtedly complex. An amendment to a piece of legislation that has already been amended many times creates a legislative framework which only those with a very high level of skill and expertise can navigate. And whilst that may play to the advantage of those in the room today, it doesn't necessarily play to the advantage of those within the sector and those who are trying to keep on the right side of rules that are difficult to ascertain and to understand. And certainly, the complexity of the legislation as it now stands does suggest that there may be time, it may now be the time for a Fitness and Probity Regime Act to be enacted so that all of the relevant legislation is contained in one place and is readily accessible not just by lawyers who generally have the wherewithal and knowledge to work around the complexity of amendments, but those involved in the sector and the public at large who don't necessarily have the same skills or access to the same level of advice. I came to the fitness and probity regime that was operated by the central bank from a background which wasn't actually a background of financial services law, but from the regulatory and disciplinary side, working within bodies such as the Medical Council, the Nursing Board, and so on. And even before the extensions that are currently proposed, it was my view of the fitness and probity regime that it's an infinitely more complex beast to corral and control for a number of reasons. There's a major distinction between the persons who are subject to regulation in this legislation, even as it stands, and those that are subject to regulation in what we think of as the regulated professions. When you think of a solicitor or a barrister or a doctor, people have a very clear idea of exactly who you're talking about. And those within the profession have a very clear idea of what are the markers and qualifications that mark somebody out from being, for example, a solicitor and not being a solicitor. The fitness and probity regime as it currently stands distinguishes between persons exercising control functions, persons exercising pre-approved control functions, firms which have to be regulated and firms which don't have to be regulated. There's no easy identifier for people to understand exactly who is and who isn't the subject of the regulatory regime, unless you're deeply embedded in it, which of course, for the most part, the public are not. This lack of a consistent understanding means that there's a consequential difficulty in understanding exactly what the standards are that people are supposed to be following. Again, if you take the example of a solicitor, members of the public have a rough idea of what a solicitor is and is not supposed to do and what does and does not constitute good practice on the part of a solicitor's firm. They have a similar understanding about what doctors should and should not be doing and generally have a sense of when something is inappropriate, for example, in the course of a medical treatment or in dealing with a medical professional. It's much more difficult for the public to understand both who is the subject of the regulatory regime and what the standards are that that regime is imposing on the persons who are regulated. And these difficulties obviously place an enormous onus on the central bank, not just as the regulator in the sense of the prosecutor where there are infringements, but as the body that has to both set and communicate the standards to all of those who are the subject of it. And I do fear that with the additional features that are being added to the regime in the new legislation, that task will become ever more complex and ever more difficult for those outside the legal and financial sectors to understand. So I do hope that my own understanding will be deepened from a shallow basis this afternoon, and I look forward very much to hearing initially David Sweetman's presse of the bill, and then subsequently the panel discussions. So thank you very much, John, for having asked me here today.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much, Judge Butler. I'm very pleased to speak to you all this afternoon. And thankfully, from my perspective, my task is limited to providing you with an overview of the bill, with the knotty and more complex provisions being left to the eminent individuals who are going to address you on the panels to follow. The 2022 bill is, which no doubt you've all read at this stage, is an incredibly important piece of legislation. And I think the next logical evolution from the last major innovation in governance standards in Irish regulated firms that were introduced under the Central Bank Reform Act 2010. And that obviously included a corporate governance code and the introduction of the fitness and probity standards. It's important to realise that prior to the introduction of these reforms, the regulatory powers that existed in the area were very uneven. At that point, the financial regulator, as it then was, could assess an individual's fitness and probity on the way into, say, the banking or insurance sectors. But once they were in, and if a concern arose about their fitness and probity, there was simply no specific power that the central bank could use to address that and to justify that person's removal. The only real power at the regulator's disposal was the so-called nuclear option of a revocation of a license or an authorization. And that unsatisfactory position was remedied in the 2010 Act, which specifically allowed the central bank to investigate a person's fitness and probity and issue first suspension and ultimately prohibition notices where, for example, there was participation in serious misconduct in the affairs of the firm, or in the case of pre-approval control functions, where there had been a failure to make a protected disclosure under the 2013 Act, where, for example, there had been a breach of financial services legislation. However, as is the case today, where the central bank wished to impose a censure or a fine as against an individual concerned in the management of a firm, that had to be done through the inquiry process or the administrative sanctions procedure under the 1942 Act. And crucially, where there was a suspicion of participation in a prescribed contravention that had been committed by the firm. And this is what is known as the participation link. While these governance measures were a positive development, clearly more was needed to be done. And as recently as 2018, the findings contained in the Central Bank's report on the culture in Irish retail banks, among other things, referred to problematic conduct, poor governance, and poor cultural practices within the Irish retail banking sector, the sort of which was a major contributor to Ireland's financial crisis and the tracker mortgage failings. And the role of good governance obviously plays a huge role in addressing that problematic culture in financial institutions, which is the driving force behind the proposals that are set out in the 2022 bill. Now, unsurprisingly, in drafting these proposals, the central bank and the minister have borrowed from our nearest neighbours, who implemented a similar senior managers and certification regime, or SMCR, in 2016. And indeed, the bill replicates many of the provisions that are contained under that regime. Ireland is not alone in this, and similar proposals or elements of that regime have been replicated or at least proposed in other jurisdictions, including Australia, Malaysia, and Singapore. The introduction of the SMCR regime followed the publication of a parliamentary report in 2013 titled Changing Banking for Good in the Wake of the LIBOR Scandal. And among other things, that report noted that the complex structures that existed in many large banks and the diverse activities of them obscured senior executive responsibility and their understanding of what was really going on in the businesses that they were supposedly running. And then when these conduct and risk failures inevitably came to light, that ignorance allowed many individuals and executives to point to or to profess their shock initially at what had been happening, to duck personal accountability and instead blame system failures or rogue individuals. And many banks also had a structure of cross-cutting functions and committees, which meant that key decisions were not owned by individual senior executives, but were shared, and that indeed undermined that sense of individual responsibility. The report went on to conclude that deliberate or not, ignorance and collective decision-making served to create what was termed an accountability firewall for senior executives. And at its core, that is precisely the type of mischief that the 2022 bill intends to prevent. So as you're all probably aware at this stage, the bill, or the framework under the bill rather, comprises four key elements, namely conduct standards for regulated firms and their management and staff, a senior executive accountability regime, or SEER, enhancements to the fitness and probity process, and stronger enforcement capabilities for the central bank. As the central bank itself has said, the regime attempts to adopt a more mature approach to governance and regulation, focusing on a firm's own culture and behaviour and approach, rather than relying on directions and compliance from the central bank. With respect to conduct standards, these can be subdivided into three different types and will apply to all regulated firms. You firstly have business standards that, as they will apply to firms, and it includes, for example, acting in the best interest of customers and disclosing matters of interest to the central bank. You then have common conduct standards for those performing controlled functions in regulated firms, for example, acting with due skill, care, and diligence, and participating in collective decision-making. And in this regard, the central bank has stated that it is acutely aware of the practicalities of running a regulated firm and the central importance of collective decision-making. And it's therefore conscious of this, of the scheme being unintentionally undermined, collective responsibility being unintentionally undermined as a consequence of the framework, and perhaps too much of a narrow focus on individual accountability. So by including this obligation on control functions to participate in collective decision-making, the framework attempts to bolster the concept of collective as well as individual accountability. Finally, then, there are additional conduct standards that are applicable to pre-approval control functions and those who may exercise a significant influence on the affairs of the firm. And those include ensuring that the business of the firm is being properly managed and that any delegated tasks have appropriate oversight over them and are to appropriate individuals. It also includes a requirement on individuals to disclose matters of interest to the central bank, and perhaps you'll hear more of this with a detail on this from the panelists on panel three on this new compliance dynamic that will come into existence. With respect to SEER, that will be implemented through, among other things, the creation of a duty of responsibility applicable to those individuals who perform senior executive function roles within regulated firms. And that duty will be supplemented through an obligation on firms to create statements of responsibility and responsibility maps that assign clear responsibilities to each senior executive function role and delineate key management and governance arrangements. And then a senior executive function, or senior executive rather, will be held to be in breach of that duty where the regulated firm has committed a prescribed contravention in the relevant business area where that over which that individual is responsible. And that senior executive did not take reasonable steps to avoid the prescribed contravention occurring or continuing, with relevant circumstances for what constitutes reasonable steps set out in a little detail under the bill. The financial services industry sectors included within the scope of SEER are not prescribed under the bill and will be provided for, we expect, under secondary legislation. But the general scheme that was published in 2021 did indicate that it will apply at least initially to banks, to insurance firms, and to certain investment firms. With respect to the proposed enhancements to the fitness and probity regime, that includes a requirement on regulated firms to certify that persons who are performing controlled functions are in compliance with standards of fitness and probity, and that also applies to controlled functions in holding companies. There will also be a look-back limitation period of 6 years within which the central bank may investigate the fitness and probity of an individual, perhaps in a former role. All of these proposals will be undermined if enhancements weren't made to the central bank's enforcement processes. And as we're all doubtless aware, the bill is designed to break the participation link by which a regulated firm must have first be found to have committed a breach of a prescribed contravention before an individual can be held responsible. And in consequence of this and the effects of imposing sanctions on individuals, the bill proposes certain amendments to align with standards of fairness in the administration of justice following last year's Supreme Court decision in Zalewski. Allied to that, the bill also formalises the process of central bank investigations in relation to the commission or participation in prescribed contraventions by individuals, which will lead ultimately to the production of an investigation report. And then finally, there are just some miscellaneous provisions, if I can call them that. There's also scope for a limited waiver of legal professional privilege to the central bank without that constituting a more general waiver of legal professional privilege. To the extent that investigations lead to an inquiry and or the imposition of sanctions under the administrative sanctions regime, the High Court will also have an oversight role and must approve sanctions that are proposed to be imposed on individuals or firms before they can take effect. And the High Court will do so unless they are manifestly disproportionate or where the central bank, or IFSAT as the case may be, has made a significant error of law. I won't say much more about this, as I don't want to trespass on the detailed discussions of the panels, but suffice it to say that the bill will inevitably give rise to very live legal issues in the context of regulation of financial services firms, and it's difficult to overstate the potential volume and complexity of those, some which no doubt will be discussed today. And I've no doubt that these will come thick and fast as the details underlying the bill begin to emerge and as the bill, once the bill is enacted. So thank you very much.